Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary. Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
True Hauntings is a Frightfully Good production.
In the mid-1960s, TV reporter Bill Baldini ran a 5-episode exposé of Penhurst State School and Hospital on a local TV channel. It shone a light on the neglect and abuse in the institution that turned out to be very hard for the regular viewers to stomach. On the black and white screens in people's homes appeared the images of full-grown hands and feet bound by straps to adult-size crib beds.
Patients of the institution were shown rocking, pacing, and twitching. Many were severely disabled, either mentally or physically, but others were quite lucid and coherent, but withdrawn into themselves because of overstimulation of the senses in the loud and sometimes frightening place, and a lack of much-needed mental stimulation. The 5-minute news segments were called Suffer the Little Children. When one patient was asked by the interviewer what he would like most in the world if he could have anything he wanted, the sad and withdrawn reply was simply, to get out of Penhurst. Beware, the history of this place is far more horrific than anything a ghost could do. Hi, I'm Renata.
And I'm Anne, and we invite you to look behind the security doors of the Penhurst State School and Hospital as we discover the many shades of blackness in its corridors and in the cold, dark heart of man.
Anne and Renata have been investigating paranormal occurrences for the past 20 years. They have been at the center of various unexplained phenomena and have witnessed countless ghostly experiences. The duo now turn to high-profile cases that have attracted the eyes of the world. Between the dimensions we see and the dimensions we don't, supernatural forces are at play. Evil lurks within the shadows of our homes and in the darkest corners of our minds. It follows us like a shadow. Forever. This is where nightmares become reality. This is True Hauntings.
And welcome back and to the studio. It's been quite a week and a bit.
It's been a trauma.
Yes, it has been. It has been. We've both succumbed to the Rona.
We scored the Rona. Mm-hmm. And Renata is out of isolation as of today, or was it yesterday?
Yesterday, yep.
And I am actually out of ISO in the next couple of hours. But we consider we both had the same disease, so I think we're fine to be able to record this together. Mm-hmm. But we were really lucky because it was not a bad dose at all.
No. Considering what people went through to begin with, yep, and considering what people still are suffering from, mm-hmm, some of them that catch it. I think personally I got out of it pretty well.
Yeah, Me too. I've really, at the moment, I feel quite good, apart from the fact I've got a fuzzy brain, mm-hmm. and my sense of taste is a bit wacky. Like, I was eating something the other day and it tasted so bitter that I wasn't sure if it was off or not. Mm. And I got Roman to taste it and he went, no, that's normal, but it's just, apparently if you taste things and it comes out bitter when you've got Rona, it actually means that you won't get the long Rona.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm grateful that it tasted bitter. I'm happy to swallow that bitter pill. But are we going to be bright and happy today, Renata?
Oh, well, this particular topic doesn't lend itself to be bright and happy.
Not really.
Going to be bright and happy, but I'm really, really wanting to get this stuff out of my head because it does sort of... Yeah.
It's pretty traumatic what these poor souls went through.
Yeah. So just... a heads up for everyone. Some of the topics we are going to be covering in this episode are not happy ones. There will not be a lot of laughter and giggling here because there is really not a lot to laugh and giggle about.
Yeah, well, it's normally what I accidentally say or you accidentally say, which is what makes us giggle, not the topic.
That is true.
And at the moment, because I've got a cod and my nose is blocked, I'm sort of getting my words a bit wrong. So who knows what's going to come out.
You've got a cod.
I've got a cod. Well, haven't you heard of people say that when they've got a cold?
Because
you can't get the L out, so it comes out, I've got a cod.
Okay. I've never heard that before.
You're so not woke, Renata. No, you're so not woke.
I am so not woke. Oh, that is guaranteed. Yeah, but if anyone may be triggered very easily or in an emotional state, just please be aware. It is important for us to tell this story and to tell the backstory of what happened because Penhurst is often talked about in very negative ways. But as I discovered as I was researching this story, that a lot of people who went down the rabbit hole really say, please do not forget about all of the beautiful people that went above and beyond to help all the people in Penhurst.
Yeah.
Do not forget about them. So part of this story is also to honour those people who worked and tirelessly gave their days off and their holidays to the people in Penhurst to give them at least some joy in life.
Oh, I like it, Renata. I could almost cry. That's just beautiful.
I know. Let's get on with the story.
Okay. During a lull in customers, I left my post and checked on Laurie, who was hanging out in the common room. She saw me and grabbed my arm. There's something in the bathroom. What? I immediately stared in that direction with my heart racing. Laurie flashed her light into the black room. There are several stalls, but a shower portion was blocked by a wall. The floor was damp. One needed to go around the shower wall to see inside. It was the shadow of a head, she said, nodding solemnly. I saw it now 3 or 4 times. Really? I replied, stunned. Unlike James, I took Laurie's words more seriously. She was around my age, a mother needing extra money. Well, I won't be going in there. I smiled and hurried back to my post, putting on a false bravery. I was getting a little freaked out. The light of the stairway beckoned to me. I stood there for a while and until I felt better. Then I started back into my routine. I hummed, whistled, and greeted patrons. I always took the same actions, peeking down the staircase, listening, and then jumping back against the wall. I was really enjoying myself now, getting good at telling people stories to set the mood. Then it happened. I jumped back into position, but I didn't feel a wall. I felt what seemed like a solid shoulder against my back, as if I had just backed into someone. Instantly, I froze. It felt like my husband was behind me. My shoulder felt numb pressure against it. People were coming up from below. Instinctively, I took 4 quick steps to the left side just as they arrived. I was so glad to see them. I stared at where I had been standing. No one was there. A chill washed over me. Had I imagined it? I wondered if I was going to make it through the season. It's only been 2 days and I'm already freaking out. I stood under the hallway light, staring into the inky blackness. Was something standing there watching me, laughing? My imagination was getting to me. I shined my flashlight into the darkness. Nothing. Did you like that one, Renata?
I did.
That
I
is
did.
From a book called Ghosts of Mayflower, A Penhurst Haunting.
Mm.
And the author is Tamara Lawrence. Now, that was written in 2013. And she was a guide that was working at the asylum when it first became an attraction.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I know you'll go more into the stories of the different stages of the life of the asylum,
mm-hmm.
but so she was there for that first batch before another group took over it, and I'm going to be talking about the second batch as well because I find that's really interesting.
Mm.
But over to you to tell us some of the, well, the very sad stories and how it ended up being what it is.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so on January the 23rd, 1903, the Eastern Pennsylvania State Institution for the Feeble-Minded and Epileptic was commissioned by the Pennsylvania Legislature.
Hang on, the Feeble-Minded and Epileptic.
Yes.
Well,
look, that was terminology that was just used at that point in time.
It's not very PC.
Yeah, but they didn't worry about that back then. So, calling them feeble-minded is actually just a gentle way of saying
yes,
it.
I've heard some
others. There were many other terms that were used over the years. So feeble-minded isn't too bad.
But epileptics aren't... they're not suffering from mental retardation.
Let's get on with this.
Okay, sorry, I'm taking offence already.
Yes.
I want to stand up for these beautiful people.
You will find out even more things that will curl your toes as
right.
we go on.
Well, luckily I've got nice woolly socks on.
Yes, yes. So this is going to be a bit of a mixture of timeline and information because it's sort of all over the place.
Just like our brains at the moment.
Just like our brains.
Have you heard of baby brain? Well, we've got COVID brain.
No, when you throw seed to the chickens and they scratch at it on the ground?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's kind of like where all my brain cells are at the moment.
Oh, okay.
They're all over the ground.
I was wondering where this analogy was going.
So this was the second institution of its type in the state of Pennsylvania at that particular time. And the building was only really large enough to house about 500 residents, and that was it. Yeah. When it was built, it really was kind of the standard, the model for these types of institutions, hard to believe, because at the time it was thought that the best solution for dealing with people with disabilities were forced segregation and sterilization. Keep taking deep breaths.
I'm ready to be offended, Renata.
Oh, you will be, 1,000 times over. So since the 1700s, people with illnesses and disabilities have often been labelled defectives.
Mm-hmm.
And around the 1820s, these defectives, along with other groups of people, you know, this the aged and sick, or the aged
us.
We would have been put in an institution.
We're also disruptive and don't listen to our husbands.
And sick and poor. So aged and sick, sick and poor, sick and disabled, aged and disabled.
How many of these boxes are we ticking?
They were all grouped together just to simplify their care. And very little effort was really made to improve their conditions. The whole thing was there was a group in society that was functioning and these people didn't belong in that group. And so what do you do with these people? And often these people were put into institutions because they didn't fit into society, because their families could not care for them, because people didn't want to connect with them and have people think, well, this is a child of mine or a family member of mine, so I'll stick them in an institution and kind of, you know.
Well, pretend we never had them.
Yes, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, all that sort of stuff. Now, after doing all of this, the problem is that all of these institutions start to fill up.
Mm-hmm. And because there's so many people who aren't perfect.
No. And the main question is, how do you look after these people that can't look after themselves and spend as little money and as little manpower as possible? And one of the things that I discovered as I was reading through all of this stuff and these notes is that virtually every time money was asked for the inmates of Penhurst mm-hmm. to help them in any way, shape or form, it was always denied. It was always like, well, give me a good reason.
Why should we spend money on something that's not perfect?
Yeah. And one of the stories was about bras and giving women bras, buying bras for them. And
they were happy to let us, the boobies wobble and be free.
Oh, well, you know, when you think of how these people were kept in the institution, bras would have, you know,
been the last thing. Very low down on the needs. Yep.
And that's that was the problem, that when they were asked about, you know, providing bras for the women, the reply was, well, we must have a good reason for this. Can you give me a good reason?
Do you like pert boobs? If you want pert boobs, give us bras.
And nothing seemed to be a good enough reason, so in the end they didn't get bras. So it's just, you know. Now, look, we're looking at the early 1900s. Slowly and surely things changed over the years, but it was literally one painful step at a time. And here we are now in the 2000s. And many things have changed,
mm-hmm.
but it's taken over 100 years.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's still hard as duck to get money out of politicians
absolutely.
To help people who need help. You've looked at aged care systems now. Yep. They just won't give them money.
Yep. Totally.
Just keep drugging them. It will be fine. Have things even changed? I don't even get me started.
So residents were called inmates. Later, they were referred to as patients, and that was regardless of age. So no matter, you know, whether they were adult or not, often all of the inmates at Penhurst were also referred to as children.
Ah, right.
Mm-hmm. So the children.
Because they called it a school, didn't they?
There was a school and there was a hospital. So this became huge. There were many, many buildings and additions to this place. So patient number one came in on November the 23rd, 1908, and by 1912, the superintendent was alerting the Board of Trustees that people with epilepsy and people with intellectual and developmental disabilities did not require the same treatment and were therefore incompatible to cohabitate in the same treatment facility.
Mm-hmm.
So to begin with, they sort of just packed everyone in together.
Yep.
And then it was like, well, you know, some of these people don't have the same level of disability than others do.
High functioning.
And as you said, epilepsy isn't a mental illness.
No.
And so you had people that were fully functioning. The only problem they had was their epilepsy. They would have their seizures. And so they were placed in with these people who were really, really, really disabled.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I'm really sorry, guys, if we're using non-PC terms, we're doing the best we can and we don't mean disrespect to anybody.
Yes, that's absolutely true. Thank you for mentioning that.
Yeah, I know, because every now and then you say something, I cringe.
Yeah, I know.
But then I said something and I cringe.
Yeah, I know.
But there's so many people out there who just want to be cringeworthy of everything.
Yeah, and look, I'm also using terminology that's used in these notes too. I am sorry.
Yeah, and please forgive the coughing and the sniffling and everything going on. We're doing our best, guys. We know this episode, if we don't do this now, this is due to come out on this coming Friday. So we're doing this because we want you guys to have an episode. Anyway, keep going, Renata.
So about 10 years later, the first female campus in Penhurst opens up and eventually it would become five buildings. So we've got 10 years where they are all together.
Mm-hmm.
And then they went, oh, this isn't turning out really well because the women are falling pregnant.
Oh, surprise!
Oopsie. So we may just change that.
Oh, fancy that.
Yeah. Now, One thing too, which is really, really horrifying, but it is part of the history back in the early 1900s, is that the fact that feeble-minded people were considered a criminal threat.
Oh, okay.
And the Commission of for the Care of the Feeble-Minded was set up. And it announced that those that were disabled should not be citizens in normal society as they caused or posed a threat to the peace.
Oh, no. It's not a threat to the peace. It's just they didn't like that they weren't acting the same way as everybody else and made noises.
Yes. Now, by May 1930, there were about 1,250 residents at Penhurst. And by 1955, there were over 3,500.
What?
Yes, 3,500. Now, I read in one, and I might jump from one thing to the next.
You go for it.
Because it just sort of tweaks my memory that there was an article, and I'm going to go into Mr. Baldini's TV episodes because that's a thing in itself.
Yeah.
But there was one thing about this over too many people there. In that there was one particular room that he said he entered into, and there were two female staff members to 80 children from the ages of 6 months.
I'm freaking out about having my two grandkids.
From 6 months to 5 years.
Oh, no. No.
This is how understaffed this place was. So before we kind of throw judgment, we have to understand the working conditions that were there for these people that actually worked there.
And
there were a few really bad apples. There were some really incredibly disgusting and horrible doctors. But on the generally, the people that worked there really cared for their patients. It was just that they physically could not handle what was going on. And in that respect, the things that we would see if we walked in at that time into those wards would absolutely just tear us apart. So you had metal cages where children were kept, and they were often lying in their feces for days. There were naked, skeletal-looking patients and children from 6 months to 5 years of age tied to their beds. And I remember reading one story where there was a blind lady, and I think she was epileptic, that was actually bound to her wheelchair for no other reason than the staff said, we'd know where she is at all times. She could walk. She was just bound to her wheelchair.
Because it was
easier
for them. Sort of safer for her as well, because if there was that many people around and feces on the floor, and I don't consider this to be safe at all, mind you. It's horrible.
Yep. So high-functioning patients were separated from the low-functioning ones eventually and put into their own wards with the lesser-abled ones as punishment at times. Some patients were intentionally aggravated to turn violent. Their assaults would be arranged by the caretakers. And then they were beaten, and some of them were then wheelchair ridden. Some of them were wheelchair ridden and some died. So they were beaten in their wheelchairs. Oh, lordy, lordy. Okay.
Yep.
And this kind of went on. There were many different, you know, stories about how bad the times were there for many of the patients. There were legislations, there were things that were happening consistently with the lack of care, lack of financial ability to service the amount of people that were there. But in the 1960s, this is where it sort of all started to come undone, because there was a reaching out to a local TV station, and there was a reporter called Bill Baldini. And he released a five-part series on Penhurst called Suffer the Little Children.
You know, I haven't been able to bring myself to actually watch that. I don't know if I can, because I saw some of the still shots from it, and it was pretty horrific.
Yep. So he, once the first episode went out, he claimed that the public's outcry was so strong, he had to go back in and rewrite and redo.
Oh, he had to re-edit it.
All of it and continue shooting. His editors and the TV station said, can you go in and get more? Please go in and get more. Because it was like finally shining a light
were astounded and wanted to know more. I thought you were saying that it was so horrific they didn't want to know about it.
Well, yes. That's why no one had done anything. But he worked so long and so hard on this that by the fifth day he couldn't even speak. He'd lost his voice. Oh. So he asked somebody else to come in and read the script.
Mm-hmm.
And this guy, John Facenda, said, it is with great regret that I tell you that reporter Bill Baldini, who has worked continuously on this series, has practically collapsed from sheer exhaustion and is unable to read the words which he has written to finish the series. So it is with considerable pride I include this report for him.
I'm covered in goosebumps. Yeah. Wow.
So he talked about this thing, as I mentioned, where, you know, he walks into a room with two attendants and 80 children aged from 6 months to 5 years, sitting in metal cribs or cages, as he calls them. When he asked why the kids were contained to these cages and couldn't walk, he reports that the attendant told him that they did not have enough staff to set up the mattresses on the floor so the children could learn to crawl. Children were simply remained in cages without learning how to crawl or walk. Now, he noticed that many of the patients were lying in their own excrement. There was, look, it's not all bad, but I just...
It's not all bad. There's a ray of sunshine in there. Somebody brought in a bunch of daffodils and put it in a vase.
Now, he also had a interview with a doctor, Dr. Jesse Fear.
Oh, that is the worst name possible.
Yes, Dr. Jesse Fear. And he was one of the doctors there that I have to say, if I could have stabbed him personally, I would have no problem at all.
What would you stab him with? Tell me, Renata.
I don't know. Something really blunt.
Oh, but... blunt.
Yeah.
So that you had to work hard to get it to go in, right?
Yeah, I would.
Okay, through the eyeball.
Because this person was foul. Okay. Absolutely foul.
I thought you were going to say a different F word then, well, so thank you so much for not doing that.
So he would specifically punish some of the residents who acted out.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And they acted out because they were frustrated. And he would degrade them. So he would send them in to care for other patients that couldn't care for themselves. And often it was about cleaning up excrement, looking after them, or getting other patients to get so riled up that they would humiliate these particular patients that he didn't like because they were acting out.
So a bully.
Yep. So he would get others to bully the people with disabilities.
Now, if I was going to believe in heaven and hell, this is one of these times. I hope there was a hell and Satan was there to greet him with a pitchfork.
Blunt pitchfork. So he claimed this punishment would offend their dignity as they were locked in a residence where residents with severe mental disabilities couldn't look after themselves. Now, he admitted in this interview that... Mm-hmm. This didn't always work.
Oh, surprise!
Really? What we're trying to do is degrade him to a certain extent amongst his fellow peers. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And they would make fun of him for a while afterwards. But I don't think there is anything inhumane about it, he says, or anything, if that's the word. So he kind of thought that it was okay. But there was one particular incident where he threatened a resident. And he said, you touch one of my boys again and I will personally going to take care of you myself.
Oh.
And he said, this young fella's name was Ernie. And he said to Ernie, before the day is out, you're going to find out what I can do to you. And so he asked the staff members for the most painful type of injection he could give this fellow without damaging him. And he said that he was very, very pleased. because he said he injected Ernie and claimed that he really hit the ceiling over that.
Oh, good on you, Dr. Fear.
Yeah, yeah.
What an absolute asshole, and I'm going to say it.
Oh, that's, I would use a different word than that.
Yeah, if you want to hear worse words than that, you've got to watch us live on Thursday nights.
Now, Baldini went ahead to say that he compared his report between Penthurst and zoos in the United States at that particular point in time.
And zoos.
Zoos, because he said...
As in animal zoos.
Yes, yes. The largest zoos would spend $7.15 each day on each animal. And in Penthurst, they only spent $5.90 per resident.
And that's medical care and everything.
Oh, well, geez, you were lucky to get medical care. I mean, they talk about the fact that there was very little medical care in that time because it just was not affordable.
It certainly wasn't in the budget,
no,
was it?
Penthurst had a capacity for 1,984 residents, and there were times when there was almost double that, 2,791.
That's astounding.
He would have liked to have had, this is the superintendent, 1,500 personnel on staff, but he said that that would mean 700 more people.
So that they
from what they had.
From what they had. Yep. So they had half of what they needed.
Yep. And it would cost them another $4 million, which they didn't have. Oh. So this means that there were 800 staff members for nearly 2,800 residents.
And that wouldn't be 800 staff members on at one time.
No.
Because it would be shifts.
Yes.
So it'd probably be 200.
Yes.
At one time.
Yep. Look, there were things that were done within Penthurst, and I'm pretty sure because of the doctors and staff getting together and kind of going, what can we do? What can we do here? There's no money. You know, it's all limited. What can we do to actually help if there is a possibility of helping? And so some of the staff would take home certain residents for holidays.
Oh, that's
and look
beautiful.
After them. Some staff came in on their weekends and helped clean and look after some residents.
Yeah.
Some of the residents who were
high functioning, yep,
would actually have these teams,
yep,
and they would go in and they would clean and do laundry for those that were incapable of doing it.
Yep.
They were these kind of working parties.
Yep.
And some of them
So the
actually,
best of humanity.
Yeah, yeah.
Were the patients, yeah, the people.
Yeah. They say that often if you went in fairly early into Penthurst, you could stay there for 21 years.
21 years?
Yes. Yeah. And the thought was that kind of once you went in, you were no longer of any use to society. And yet when Penthurst eventually closed down, they talk about the number of patients that actually came out of Penthurst and lived full, amazing lives to the detriment of, you know, everything that happened to them.
Yeah.
And
so they should never have been there.
They should never have been there. Absolutely. Now, the thing that really sort of was the undoing of Penthurst was this class action. This action in 1974 of Terry Lee Haldeman against the hospital. It was a class action lawsuit. And this fellow, Terry Lee, said he suffered about 40 injuries while he was a resident there. And they included cracked teeth, a fractured finger, and a broken jaw. And he actually stood up finally and went, no, I'm going to take these assholes.
Buggers.
To court.
Yep.
And this is what eventually brought Penthurst down. And from that point on.
Well, good on you, Terry.
Yeah, when all of this stuff came out, Dr. Fear actually had to leave.
Only leave? He should have been put in prison.
Not quite sure there was
Or even put into the same circumstances he put people in.
Yeah. They did do operations there.
Oh,
yeah, and I'll just finish that. Yes, so Penthurst actually closed down after this case, and yeah, that was kind of the end. And a lot of the inmates that were there were actually sort of then distributed to other mental facilities, healthcare facilities. I just want to state this though, and these are all records that you can find.
Mm-hmm.
like say, talk about going into a particular room where they found a chest of documents, and in the documents there was a 3-ring binder about 5 inches thick. It was completely filled with files of patients who had died, why they died, and when and where they died. The odd part of it was that most patients had died from restraints or patient got out of hand doctors or nurses handled.
So they accidentally killed them.
Mm. The worst part was in the back of the folder there was a tally sheet of the operations for 3 doctors. Under each doctor's name there was a spot for deaths on the table, death from complications and survivals. Now, it says here a good 75% died on the table, while a few others died from complications. Very few survived any of the operations that occurred at Penthurst.
But it didn't sound like it was an institution that was meant to have operations, like an operating theatre.
Well, it was called a hospital. Yeah, Penthurst State School and Hospital.
Okay.
Mm. So just one more thing. There was an account, an autobiography by a gentleman called Roland Johnson, and he was a former resident of Penthurst, and he moved in 1958. Now, he says in his autobiography, he witnessed a boy being thrown out of a window. So while the attendants were changing over for their shifts and not looking, someone pushed the boy out the window.
Yeah.
The boy survived. They didn't think he would, but he survived with a broken hip and leg. Johnson says that the smell of Penthurst was like that of a doghouse. It just smelled of feces. There were rats crawling, roaches crawling all over, feces and pee on the floor, and flies coming in the windows.
I imagine there would have been maggots too.
Yep. Oh. This was the state of all the low-grade wards, meaning the wards with residents with low mobility. So all the residents that could not move or were tied or chained in lived in those conditions. Johnson claims that residents were threatened and beaten by staff members. He claimed that staff members warned residents that if they told their parents what was going on inside Penthurst, they would be punished. Now, punishments included moving to a punishment ward.
A punishment ward.
Well, that's what they called it. And a beating with a broomstick and cleaning up other residents' excrement. Now, apparently there were a number of punishment wards. Let me go 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, probably about 6 punishment wards.
6?
Hmm.
And the actual layout of the place, it sort of grew and grew and grew, didn't they? Because they had so many people coming in, they just kept making more buildings.
Yes. Yep. Yep. So the whole place was closed down in 1978. And the 1,230 residents that were left were moved into community living settings. And yes, that's...
They would have all been very traumatised individuals.
My goodness, yeah. And I mean, how do you re-teach a child from 6 months old to function?
Yeah.
After having lived through that sort of a trauma?
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, everyone, I'm Craig Robinson, co-host of the Ways to Win podcast, alongside my good friend John Calipari. I've been on the go recently, Phoenix, Kansas City, Chicago. If you're like me and have a home but aren't always at home, you have an Airbnb. Hosting your home or a spare room is a very practical side hustle. If you live in a big game town, you can Airbnb your place for fans to stay in. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
How do you even begin? I have no idea.
There must be some very patient, beautiful people out there that help
absolutely.
Them. That's all I can say. So from what I can work out with the layout of the places, as I said, they kept adding buildings, but they also had them all connected with tunnels underneath the ground. There was a whole tunnel system associated with it as well. So did you read anything about that?
No.
Okay, well, I picked up on a lot of that in the ghost hunting information.
Mm-hmm.
But after it closed down, it was then purchased to become a haunted attraction, a Halloween attraction.
Yes.
And that's where I'm going to pick it up and keep going. So what I can work out, this, I sort of pick it up from around the 2009, 2010, there was this some articles there that said that the first version of the haunted asylum that went into the place actually caused a bit of an uproar, and there were people sort of saying it's, you know, it's disgusting, it shouldn't be there. I've got a few things here that I can read to you. The first version of the haunted asylum was as bad as anticipated. A fictional Dr. Chakajian and his minions were shown experimenting on asylum inmates. Yep. This is an example of what would happen at the asylum in the early days. On a Friday night, dozens of people wound their way up to the entrance of Penhurst's former administrative building and paid $50 to enter. First, visitors entered a museum featuring photos and information about the institution. Then they entered the haunted house, which is filled with gruesome props, bloody dental patients and parts of the original morgue. The last walk is through the underground tunnel system that used to connect the buildings. Screams filled the seemingly endless stretch of utter darkness. Visitors emerged the sound of local heavy metal bands.
Oh, nice.
You weren't expecting that, were
no.
you? So they would sort of have this haunted house that you'd get a bit of a museum, and I think that was to tick a box so mm-hmm. that they could try and placate people and say, oh, no, we're teaching the history here,
mm-hmm.
and then put them in where they've got doctors torturing patients.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Great.
Lovely.
Let's honour history in such a beautiful way. To then come out to the rock bands. So the businessman behind the venture was Richard Chakashian, recognise that name? He says that he bought the 110-acre property 2 years ago. It was in ruins. He now runs a local recycling business and hopes to make a haunted house a yearly Halloween event. And he quotes there saying, we went well out of our way to make sure that this event doesn't mock or mimic any of the handicap. We just have doctors torturing them.
Right.
And I believe that the public that comes through here know the distinction and the difference between making fun of something and a Halloween event. According to at least 17,000 people have come since the haunted house opened in that late that September. And he believes it's contributing to the local economy. But... But there was the PMPA, who were the Penhurst people who were trying to look after the history, completely opposed to the operation of the haunted attraction, and said that it portrays people with disabilities in a demeaning and degrading fashion, demonising people with disabilities as a profit-making entertainment is offensive, or should be offensive to everyone, according to them. We urge people who share our disgust to speak out against the haunted asylum and boycott this travesty. So there were some upset people. Then, of course, we have the famous ghost hunting TV shows head on in to discover, are there any ghosts in the asylum? I always love this spot I find about Ghost Adventures, where they summarise everything for you and tell you all the juicy stuff that went down. So in the preliminary investigations, they had unidentifiable noises and moving objects. Even before the investigation started, they heard a banging sound outside of the building. And when they went inside, a large desk had been found tipped over and there were fresh drag marks seen under it. Of course, there was no camera set up at that stage. So they've got no idea how that happened. But of course, it's a ghost. Whilst they were interviewing a man who worked there, and his friend's son both saw an apparition open and close the blinds in a window. And when they went up to the room, so they were outside and they saw these blinds open and close. When they went up to the room, the blinds are actually shown to be behind very heavy metal mesh, so that nobody could actually get in there to move those blinds.
That's very interesting.
Yeah. During the investigation, they heard footsteps, breathing, noises. That was Renata. She
it
just dropped one.
Not,
doors slamming, bangs, female voices, screams, hissing. Yeah, you do that well. And a door opening. Oh, this is starting to sound like Spooky Sunday Show. They had EVPs, lots of EVPs, go away, hello, what are you doing? Get out, you've done it, sweet, help me, the girl did.
Very generic, aren't they?
They had lots of loud bangings elsewhere as well. An unseen force throws a rock at poor Zach.
Poltergeist.
Poor darling. There was an apparition of a mist heading towards Zach and grabbed his pockets. He must have had a sweetie in there. It was a candy bar. No, in Australia, sweetie means like a your girlfriend or something. I don't think you meant that. I meant he had a candy bar in there. Or we call it here a lolly.
A lolly.
You going to lick a lolly? Yeah, that means something. Look, I think lollies in America are actually what we call ice blocks.
I don't know.
I know. It's getting very tangled now. I've gone completely off.
You have.
Is COVID brain. Welcome to COVID brain. But look, they had lots of things. They had a an EVP or the, what was it? No, the word database. So it must have been like an early ovilus came up with the word hit, and out of nowhere, a coat hanger hit Zach on the side. And they reviewed the footage and they could see the coat hanger was actually hanging on the other side of the wall. And they believe it was a spirit that threw it. So there was temperature fluctuations, a light anomaly, unexplainable physical contact. Explainable physical contact. When Zach, Nick and Aaron began walking in the underground tunnels, Nick accidentally trips over an old metal chair and receives pieces of glass in his hand and is cut on his hand.
Oh,
darling.
I hope he got a tetanus shot for that.
I know. You
there
imagine
been rats on the floor.
So look, that was the activity they had there. Now, I had another example of some activity, and this was a lady called Beverly Mitchell. Now, she's an actress. She might be known to some people as playing the younger sister Ruthie on Seventh Heaven. Now, she was there filming a movie called, I think it was Penhurst. I think that's what it was called. And she had some feelings, some icky feelings about it. Let me see if I can see where it says there. Yeah, I had to pause and work out where it was. She had the overwhelming feeling of spirits and shocking circumstances involving paranormal activity at the ghost-infested hospital. So she just had vibes about it and she didn't feel real good about it. So she ended up on a TV show where they take famous actors and things back to places that they've had haunted experiences, paranormal experiences. And I used to watch this show. I loved it. But I think this article's mixed up a few things here because it said, Beverly is later compelled to face her worst fears and meets up with the Long Island psychic.
Okay.
Kim right. Russo.
Yeah.
Now, we all know the Long Island psychic medium as Teresa Caputo.
That's right.
So, yeah. Anyway, I can't remember what the name of the show Kim did, but she, I really used to like that. So apparently where she felt most of the stuff was the administration building, and Kim goes in and she senses that the staff brought women into the building for sexual pleasure. Male spirits totally dominate the room, and the immense energy was detected by both the psychic and Beverly.
Right.
So that's just one psychic picking up on a story
mm-hmm.
and presenting it to the world.
Mm-hmm.
That actually upsets me a little bit. I don't know whether it's true or not.
Mm.
How could you know if that was true? And I'm going to finish up at the end with a little quote from the Long Island medium. What's her name? Sorry, Kim. She had something nice to say. Now, I apologise if I'm jumping all over the place, but COVID brain. Then there was this book that I did the soundscape from, The Ghosts of Mayflower, Penhurst Haunting. And this is a story of a person who went in there to work as a tour guide when it first opened, as that first
mm-hmm.
type of haunted asylum.
Yes.
And there was really interesting things. I struggled to read it because the grammar was so bad, and they haven't obviously had somebody who is a checker, what they call the print check, to make sure that everything was right, because she's got the use of two and two all over the place.
Okay.
And I'm a grammar Nazi sometimes, so me who failed English. So one of the interesting things she said was, when my son and I arrived at work on Saturday night, we were informed we are not to scare any of the customers, that the people were on a real ghost hunt and we're only there to guide them and to keep off the third floor. We were told we are like ghosts there, but not scary. So that was interesting, that they're taking people into the location.
Mm-hmm.
And if it's a proper ghost hunt, they're actually saying to them, don't do any jump scares, don't mm-hmm. do anything. But reading sort of further into the book, some of the guides got bored
yep.
and they would start to do things.
Mm-hmm.
One of the famous ghosts there, now, the Mayflower building is the one that is really well known. They do talk about the admin building, and there is another one as well, which I will get to. But they talk about a ghost called Howie. Now, I don't know if Howie is a child or a child mind.
Right.
Then this is the little story they've got here. Howie, come out to play, James cried from the darkness. He was on a mission to find the elusive Howie. Howie was rumoured to haunt the Mayflower building. I'm not sure where he came from or who he was, but he was supposedly a lost soul who owned the toys in the Mayflower. An old ball sits on the first floor and a worn Fisher-Price aeroplane on the second. Both are said to be Howies. If you touch a toy, Howie would get you. People would say that toys moved around by themselves. The ball supposedly would roll beneath the beds on the first floor. How does anyone know it's Howie's haunting this place? I asked my son. Of all people who have been through here, how would they even know? And that is my question.
Mm.
How did Howie come into existence?
Mm-hmm.
Is it a real story, or is this something that was created for the haunted asylum?
Mm-hmm. Or was there something that was going on, but someone decided to give it a name?
Yeah.
You know what it's like.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes you have this, well, I'm just kind of saying that, you know, sometimes in some places things do happen on occasion and they'll go, well, instead of saying it or that, they just give it a name.
And look, these guys, like this particular one, would do things like, I started having fun with people as they entered my area. I would greet and warn them about Howie. Don't touch his plane. He doesn't like it.
Mm-hmm.
So now they're starting to layer down some of this story.
Yep.
Which people will then take as gospel truth.
Yep.
Yeah. Now, there was another story. Look, that book is available on the interwebs if you want to go and get it. I did purchase it because I always believe in supporting the authors. But let me tell you about another article I found. And this is one that they're talking to people who worked there. And they were asking Ashley, had she had any supernatural experiences at Penhurst? And the one she most vividly recalls was an auditory experience. Now, it's hearing.
Mm-hmm.
Oral is with your mouth.
Mm-hmm. Okay, why are you looking at me when you're saying that?
I don't know. Oh, no. So they said they heard an old-timey music box playing throughout Mayflower Building that she couldn't account for. But it seemingly came from the third floor.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in this the Mayflower book that I was reading, it seems that the third floor is always alluded to as the scary one. And that's where most of the activity. But then they talk about going down into the basement. And there is somebody called Flip who says that there is stuff going on down there. When you hear get out, it's probably because you're scaring them rather than anything territorial or malicious. And like, you imagine if us humans are in a space where somebody who is still in a death state or a lost spirit, and we've got us coming in there, mm-hmm. and they're just like, go away, they're terrified.
Mm, yeah.
So I get that. I thought that was actually quite a nice little statement. But there is a ghost called the King, a menacing figure popular with the paranormal enthusiasts.
Enthusiasts.
I'm going to start singing a hymn or something. I don't know. Enthusiasts who frequent Penhurst. The King was a maintenance worker here from the 40s or 50s. This was his domain, the boiler room.
Oh, always the boiler room.
That's right. There's always stuff that goes down in the boiler room, I'm sure. He was not very well and he did not treat patients very well. Sometimes you'll smell cigar smoke down here. He is known to come across on EVPs as a shadow figure. Hang on, EVPs
as a shadow figure. Oh,
hang on, no, I didn't read that correctly with the commas. He is known to come across on EVPs.
All right.
As a shadow figure.
All right, okay.
Isn't it interesting how you can change the interpretation by not putting that pause or comma in the correct place?
Yeah.
And he'll even touch you.
Oh, touch.
Oh, God. He is not a nice spirit. It's a bit like that potato vodka I tried. Not a nice spirit. He does like the ladies, though.
Mm. I bet he does.
So all true believers, the staff at Penhurst are well acquainted with the King, though they are uncertain if he is a poltergeist or demonic activity. Did any of those things sound like a poltergeist?
No.
Did any of that sound demonic?
No.
Why do they use these terms?
Because it makes it a better story.
Oh, it does, doesn't it? I've got goosebumps.
You do not.
No, I don't. Nothing's ever escalated. Knock on wood. Past him just kind of messing with people. So that's not demonic.
No.
He comes across with a creepy laugh. He's told us his name, and we've even had a full conversation on previous EVPs I've heard.
He probably said to them, I'm demonic. I'm demonic.
I'm special. Even in the ghost world, they need to be bloody special. Oh. All right. Now, look, we're running out of time quickly, so I'm going to leave it with the ghost stories there because there's sounds of footsteps, there's banging, there's things being moved, there's stuff being thrown. It's all the typical stuff.
Yep.
And I want to go over to this lovely article I found from the ncph.org, History at Work, who should tell the story of Penhurst haunted asylum. And this is now going into the final stage of where Penhurst is at now and who's taken over it. So this is talking to a disability studies historian.
Right.
Isn't that a cool title? Mm-hmm. Sarah Hanley-Cousins. And she's saying, I like a ghost story as much as anyone, but the patients who lived at Penhurst weren't spooky spirits. They were human beings with complex lives.
Yep, yep.
Oh, I just got goosebumps. So the new owners and general managers have personal connections to the disability community. Aware of the unintended consequences of what happened before, they changed the features of the attraction and empowered a group of disabled performers with creative control.
Oh,
I know. Isn't this fabulous? I told you I found such a good twist. The new haunted attraction is now worth a second look. More than half of the performers, which they call themselves haunters, identify as disabled.
Oh, how awesome.
A few even have personal histories of being institutionalized as well. So they've been in institutions. Mm-hmm. The new haunted asylum turns the original plot on its head. The haunters each assume a fictional identity and the inmates conspire to take over the asylum from the professionals.
Oh, yes.
So instead of the doctors and everyone performing things on the actors doing it that way, they've turned it completely ass up. The fictional doctors, nurses and the visitors become the new inmates.
Oh, yes.
Oh, isn't it? I just fabulous. Love it. All right, so there is a person called Autumn Werner who has a psychology major at Westchester University. So she's a bright cookie, was the first Penhurst Memorial Fellow. She is a person with a disability and performs in the at the attraction as a haunter. In a personal email that she sent to them, she explains her involvement. To me, being on the site and performing and building a community as we have has given, oh my God, I need to put my teeth back in. Hang on, let me start that again. To me, being on the site and performing and building a community as we have has given the disabled population here the power back. Yeah. We have reclaimed the space and seek to perform, educate and welcome others into it.
Yeah, yeah. How great is that?
Yep. They have a they mentioned something about they get paranormal investigators that want to come in and investigate, and they understand that, but they have a deep sense of respect. This is the people who are running the place, have a deep sense of respect and protectiveness of the Penhurst Cemetery. So they will allow you into the buildings, and I've got some of the tours here. I have to tell you some of the tours that they run in a second. But the staff will not share the location of the final resting place of some of these poor people because they want that to be respected. And they said the Penhurst site itself is a sacred one.
Yeah.
One other haunter had to say, we preserve the property and we're doing our best to educate people about what happened here. I don't want them to just walk through here and just think it's something scary. So it sort of goes on because you get all these people who take on this self-righteous thing and go, oh, it's dreadful. It's this, it's that and something else. But to me, these people have the right to tell the story of what happened to their people leading up to this moment in time.
Yeah.
I love it. I think it's amazing. Now, let me tell you about the tours, because we have the possibility of hiring this place for ourselves to investigate if we get over there. And maybe we can find a couple of people to chip in with us who might want to come and do the investigation with us. So they have team paranormal investigations. Your team must be 10 people or more. The base fee for this is $100 per person.
Ooh.
I think that's a bargain. And the event is not equivalent to a site rental. Access is not exclusive. Other teams may or may not be on the site. So they sort of
give you a space.
It's like what we do at Maitland Jail.
Yep.
Speaking of which, Maitland Jail, we have got next week, by the time we come out, it will be is it 24th? 24th of August?
Yes.
We have True Hauntings Live, where Renata and I are going to be performing a True Hauntings episode live in front of an audience. You can only buy the tickets at Maitland Jail, M-A-I-T-L-A-N-D, Maitland Jail. Now we spell it G-A-O-L. So look it up. Grab yourself a ticket. It's more than half sold already. So we're going to be presenting the Amityville Horror Case. Oh, I'm excited.
Can't wait.
Right, they also have public paranormal tours. Sorry, getting back to the Pennhurst. And they can be led by someone who will take them on a paranormal investigation. They have overnight paranormal investigations. So I think what they're saying is that you can have 10 people to do a paranormal investigation, but or you, 2 people can do it. You just got to pay for 10.
Yes.
And you get that area for a bit. Mm-hmm. I'm sure we can find some other people to join us. Oh, my brain is skitzing everywhere. This is the one I wanted to get to. This is the cool one. The horror camp out.
What does that involve?
$150 a person? I don't think I'd do it. The horror camp is an immersive simulated horror summer camp experience. I hope that doesn't include the food as being horror. It's strictly for 18 years or over. Campers will take part in quests, which occur all evening throughout the grounds. No, I want to sleep. They've got escape rooms, puzzles, physical challenges, and a real ghost hunt. Don't plan on sleeping, it says. But this is the thing that got me. Pennhurst Asylum Horror Camp may include total darkness, water spray, uneven surfaces, steps up and down, strobe lighting, latex, narrow tunnels, simulated body fluids, spaces which require you to bend down while walking, sudden loud noises, live actors, as well as fog and scent effects, which are intended to startle and frighten you. If you are an asthmatic, please be certain to bring your inhaler as a precaution.
Yeah, no.
Yeah, I just had an OMFG written next to that. But this is now being run by the people that I was mentioning earlier. Mm-hmm. So it's a very much an empowering thing. Mm-hmm. Now, I've got to get to my little final bit, which was sort of to bring us back to where this all started. And, I mean, the reason we tell the history is to layer the story to show how a haunting may have been created. Mm-hmm. That's why history is always so important.
Mm-hmm. And this site has everything that should make a place haunted.
Absolutely. So this is a quote from The Happy Medium, Life Lessons from the Other Side by Kim Russo. The souls trapped here have had untold anguish in their lives. The term tortured souls truly applies here. Many have endured such inhumane treatments at the hands of others that it is unthinkable. They have experienced everything from scientific experimentation, beatings, sexual assault, and starvation to complete and utter neglect. Those that stay behind have deeply complex issues to resolve. Some desperately want to expose the atrocities they suffered when they weren't mentally or physically able to defend themselves as a means of protecting or defending others that still are there. I just really liked the way she just summarized what the layering and what would cause the hauntings here at Pennhurst. Now, I have a couple of questions for you. Mm-hmm. First off, do you think it's haunted?
I would probably feel, I think if I went in there, I would probably feel a lot of energy that is there.
Definitely residual, surely.
Lots and lots of residual energy. Why spirits would want to choose to stay in a place that gave them so much horror, I don't know. Maybe the confusion that they felt in life is still there after death, and that is why. Not sure. I would probably lean towards there being some sort of haunting there. Yep. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Second question. Would you go and visit the Halloween attraction of Pennhurst?
No. No, it doesn't do it for me. I'm not into jump scares or horror movies.
Absolutely not.
I'd rather the real stuff. And if I walk away going, nothing. I'm still not upset about it.
I'm never disappointed. I'm just happy to have been in the location.
Yep.
Last question. Would you investigate?
Yes.
My bag's under the bed. Let's go.
Yes.
All right. I'm going to say that I think the place would be haunted, definitely by residual, possibly intelligent as well, because I think there might still be some staff there that are tending to those who are left behind.
That's a possibility.
Mm. Anyway, hope you've enjoyed this week's episode of the very snotty and blocked up COVID rancid naughty aunties. Yeah. We'll be back next week with another episode. Now, we are doing a big push on YouTube, guys. We need you to get over there. Please subscribe to Anne and Renata, Frightfully Good. And we will be back next week with another episode. In the meantime, stay spooky.
And we'll see you on the dark side.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to this episode of True Hauntings. If you like the show, give us a 5-star rating and leave a review. Subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you're listening right now. For more on Anne and Renata, follow at Anne and Renata on Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, and YouTube, or visit their website, www.anneandrenata.com.
Hey, folks, I'm Mark Maron from the WTF Podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.